Bioshocked, Part 6. One man's art is another man's psychosis.
I stopped at the door to the bathysphere and looked back. Langford waved to me and I smiled, repeating to myself that this wasn't going to be the last time I'd see her, and then entered the bathysphere. Langford, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Got everything locked down?
Doors are shut and the bathysphere lifts are locked in the down position. Even if they could take a bathysphere here, they'd be stuck below the waterline. And without the lifts to bring up the bathysphere, they might as well be in Iowa.
Good. I'm glad you'll be safe.
Oh, you're a darling man. If only I was 20 minutes younger.
A moment of silence, then. Okay. I'll check in with you later. Get some rest. I clicked off and sat back in the bathysphere, looking out the window of the door. There were more neon signs, more advertising for casinos, a theater called the Fleet Hall, and a place called Eve's Garden. I got the distinct impression I was heading towards a funhouse. And I wasn't going to be having any fun. I stepped out into the entranceway of Fort Frolic, hearing music coming in over the loudspeakers. I picked up the radio and switched the channel to Elizabeth's frequency. Elizabeth, I made it to Fort Frolic. Looks like Cohen's going to have me singing for my supper, so to speak. I listened for a reply. Nothing. She must be asleep. At least I hope she was. Elizabeth? Static. I was really starting to dislike this place. Maybe it's a dead zone. Maybe the reception's bad.
Atlas Ryan Langford Songbird. Da 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 da.
Came a new voice over the radio.
Time was you could get something decent on the radio.
Or my radio was being jammed by a psychotic.
The artist has a duty to seduce the ear and delight the spirit. So say goodbye to all those blowhards, and say hello to an evening with Sander Cohen.
The front door opened, sliding to the side. I walked into an entrance area with one of those fortune-telling machines to the right, some telephones and a gene bank to the left, as well as a serious set of metal shutters covering a double-sized entrance. For someone who was supposedly so welcome, this place was pretty empty. I walked forward, seeing some crates and rubble to the side. The hall curved to the right, and there was an open door straight ahead that led straight to another bathysphere. Hot damn! Elizabeth, here I come! I ran through the doorway to the bathysphere, but before I could reach it, the door closed and the craft lowered into the water. I stopped before I collided with the gate in front of where the bathysphere once sat, and then I heard piano music. As the music played, I saw a large bunny mask lower in front of me, and I took in the rest of the details of the room around me. The walls were covered by red curtains, like a movie theater, with statues being lowered, and it looked like they were made of plaster. You'd think someone as theatrical as Cullen would have made them look nicer. If I didn't know better, I'd think they were... Oh my God. No. He didn't!
Now, I haven't seen a sign of real life down here in months. Let's see if you're just another Johnny come lately. Or maybe something more delicious.
I turned back toward the entrance hall. I think I groaned. How can a man on the ocean floor manage to get himself in even deeper in trouble? Well, here I was in Fort Frolic. However, I was about as far from a mood to do any frolicking as I was from the island of Fiji. I knew I was close to finding Elizabeth, but the ferryman was a flipped-out artiste with some murderous ideas about what constituted performance art. In one case, it involved covering people in plaster and making them into statues. And I had that familiar sinking feeling that sculpture wasn't the only medium this artist worked in. Well, unless I wanted to swim to where Elizabeth was, I had to play this artist's game and dance to his tune a little while. Whoa! I stopped short as I saw a web of wire strung across the hallway, just like the ones used to block my path back at the Rose Garden in Arcadia. And from the look of the sparks they were giving off, each one carried a lethal charge, aching to discharge into somebody stupid enough to even look at them funny. Well, if Cohen expected me to just blunder into them, then he gave me too much clearance. Saw the wires in plenty of time to avoid them, and there was some open space to the left. As I moved to the left, I had to laugh at the sloppy work. As a trap, it was as dumb can get. That's when I heard the telltale scrapings of spider splicers moving along the ceiling towards me. This wasn't a trap. This was a corral. I brought up the shotgun. I briefly thought about maybe using the charged trip lines as cover, trying to get the splicers to follow, but I knew they'd throw their hooks at me and I'd be a sitting duck. No. Better to face them head on. Not much better, but better. The first two dropped, a male and a female. Both were dressed for the theater, and their clothes were once quite elegant. Now they were bloody rags, and I don't think it was their blood. I ducked out of the way as the female leaped towards me, then fired twice at her, then at the male, catching him in mid-leap. Researching how to make them dead faster, and shotguns filled with double-aught buckshot made short work of them, but more were coming. I considered then aim my pistol not at them, but at the ceiling they were traveling across, causing them to let go and fall into the tripwires, electrocuting them and removing the wires, making the corral bigger.
Nicely done,
Cohen said approvingly.
Where did you study?
Great. He sees combat and death as art. Rapture School of Hard Knocks, I answered, going back to the shotgun. Three more splicers crawling across the roof. I waited for them to get close, then sprinted for the other side of the open space, stopping just short of the remaining tripwires, looking around as if to look for a means of escape. I counted to three in my head, then jumped to the side as the three splicers, sensing panic prey, decided to race to see who would be the first to eviscerate me. However, they crashed into each other and the remaining tripwires. I waited until the informal electrocution stopped, and then hot-footed it toward the entrance so I could get room to maneuver. I was tired of playing around with these guys, and I switched to the grenade launcher, turning and firing. My ears rang as the explosives turned the splicers into meat confetti, and I scanned the area, looking to see if any more wanted to dance.
Oh, I can smell the malt vinegar in this one.
The bastard was practically rubbing his hands together in glee. I could hear it in his voice.
I've waited so long for something tasty to come to this little burg, but all that pass are yokels and rubes. Where are my manners? Come in, come in! Sander Cohen awaits you at the Fleet Hall.
Oh, the anticipation was killing me. No, wait, actually it wasn't. Everything else wanted that. As a double set of shutters opened, I heard music and saw lights coming on in front of me. I moved in carefully. Bitter experience had taught me the stupidity of going into any place in Rapture with eyes closed and fast feet. I entered a large area with a set of stairs going up, and near the foot of the stairs sat a small stage, curtains and all. More plaster-covered splicers were there, six on the stage supporting five frames, and five others frozen in positions of adoration and applause. The stairs leading up gave me a great view of the neon signs advertising the nearby stores, casinos, and other attractions.
Welcome to Fort Frolic,
Sander proudly crowed using the PA system. I felt about as welcome as a cave of syphilis, but he went on.
No need to thank me for jamming the transmissions of those outsiders. Let them have their squabbles and their agendas. The artist, yes, the artist knows there is richer earth to till.
Now I knew why he was happy to see me. As much as he needed an audience, he wanted something more, to justify his arrogance. I got the feeling he wanted me to help him create something, and the blank frames on the stage cinched it. If it was something he could do, he would have done it himself already. Besides, that's what underlings are for.
For example, I test you, little moth, but for a reason. I test all my disciples. Some shine like galaxies, and some burn like a moth at the flame. Come now into my home.
Said the spider to the moth. I went up the stairs and headed for the Fleet Hall. It was easily the biggest theater I've seen here yet, and had its own ticket booth, snack counter, and security camera. One jolt and a convenient hack later, and the front entranceway was locked. You know, there's nothing like a nice impartial setup, which is exactly what this was. Let's see, locked main door, two ways up from here, a roped off set of spares, and an elevator. Apparently someone thinks I celebrated my first birthday yesterday. I walked to the stairs and deposited some proximity mines, then sauntered over to the elevator and held my finger over the call button. Gentlemen, start your engines. I pressed the button that beat feet back to the foyer, and just in time, too. Three leadhead splicers ran down the stairs, screaming in rage as they hit the mines. All four of them. Miraculously, two of them survived, heading straight for the elevator, crossing right in front of the security camera, and each of them earning their very own hostile security bot, patent pending. I resisted the urge to grab a snack as the splicers lost all interest in killing me, then all interest in oxygen. Besides, God only knew how long those candy bars had been on the shelf. The elevator arrived, the splicers were dead, and as usual, it was waste not want not. Then I got into the elevator and pressed the button to go up. The car rose slowly, and as I went up, I heard someone playing a piano. Nice tune, classical piece. Then as I got to the next floor, I heard Cohen yelling,
"No, no, no!"
Then a new voice, pleading, "Mr. Cohen, please!"
"Silence!"
Cohen again, strict. So it wasn't Cohen playing, it was someone else.
"Allegro, allegro!"
I frowned. I might not have been a music critic, but the piano work sounded great to me. I moved over the carpeted hallway and came to the glass door separating the hallway from the entrance. They opened obediently and I could hear the music clear. It was beautiful, if energetic. The piano player was playing up a storm. I moved closer only to hear the music interrupted by Cohen's voice again.
"Da da 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 da, presto, presto, no, no!"
The music stopped and the player turned, giving me a better look at him. His face was covered with a bird's mask. Behind him, I could see shadows of figures carrying large scissors, and there was some red-weaved cloth draped over the piano. Wait, that wasn't cloth. That was several sticks bound together like a string of firecrackers. Only each one of them was about a foot long. "I'm trying, please," the man pleaded again. Cohen, however, was unsympathetic.
"Once more, young Fitzpatrick?"
This couldn't be. Was Cohen really going to blow a man to kingdom come for not playing music the way Cohen wanted it? I froze, not wanting to make things worse. I'd never be able to run over to him in time. Maybe if Cohen hasn't seen me yet, I could sneak closer. Maybe yank the primer. Fitzpatrick started playing again. But I'd lost all interest in the music. I had to figure out a way to get him away from that piano. I moved as close as I could, hiding behind the other splicers, literally plastered to their seats.
"Da da 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 da, no, no!"
Cohen yelled. Fitzpatrick turned back up to the light shining on him and says, "Oh, Cohen, you sick fuck, let me out of..." The explosion of the piano lit up the theater as if the sun had suddenly sneaked in, and I felt the blast wave lift me up and knock me a few feet backwards. I landed hard, then pulled myself to my feet. Fitzpatrick lay to the right side of the stage, burned nearly beyond recognition. The piano had been reduced to kindling. My ears were still ringing, and my side hurt where I'd landed on the steps. I walked towards the stage in a daze, my mind fighting to comprehend what had happened, and failing miserably.
Come down now, little moth. Life, death, the burden of the artist is to capture.
I wanted to punch that smug little bastard in the nose almost more than anything in the world right now. I wanted to punch him until Fitzpatrick asked me to stop. But this guy was the way to Elizabeth, and I had to bide my time. What do you want me to do?
See young Fitzpatrick there on the stage. Use your camera. Take him as he is now, so I may remember him.
I got closer. The smell hit me first, a smell that reminded me of pork chops. I tried not to gag as I got closer to Fitzpatrick's body. Cohen suddenly yelled,
What are you waiting for? Fitzpatrick can't hold that pose forever.
Oh, I'm pretty sure he can. I took his picture and walked away fast before I threw up at the smell.
And now you've got Fitzpatrick caught in his moments of glory.
Cohen said with great satisfaction.
It seems you've got the eye of the shutterbug, little moth.
So, now what? I asked as I walked back up the stairs to the second floor.
Now head to the atrium and place his photograph in my masterpiece. And so our collaboration commences.
I didn't like the sound of that. What's more, I realized that I had no idea how many little sisters were in this place, and I had no way of finding out by talking to Tenenbaum. Maybe if I found a pneumo. Well, that would have to wait.
Yes, and there's Fitzpatrick, freed of his kinks and defects.
There was a sound of tinny fanfare, then a door in the floor of the stage opened, with what appeared to be a plaster statue with a crossbow in its hands rising from the floor.
Go ahead. Take it. You may yet find it of some use. Now here's the glorious news. This is just the moment of conception. Out in this place there are three men and one woman, all former disciples of mine, all connected by a common thread. Betrayal. Find the men, little moth, and immortalize their mortality in my pentaptic. Find the songbird in her cage and silence her twittering.
I felt as if someone had put my heart into a vice. Surrounded by ice, I had to think fast.
Go. Once they've been sent to their reward, I shall join your new coalition against a man I once loved.
Imagine my glee. Where are they?
You'll find three of them in Poseidon's Plaza. When they are dust, I shall bring you to the songbird. Clip her wings and bring her body to me.
I thought you just wanted her picture.
Do not cast me as the fool in this production. I am aware that should you meet her and see her face, she will beguile you. Plead for her life. Use her female charms.
He made the words sound like profanity.
Upon you, do her best to distract you. An artist that cannot commit to a vision is no better than someone painting a house.
Fine, but I want something more from you. Cohen was suspicious. He didn't even bother to hide it in his voice.
Oh? And why, little moth, should I give you more?
I want to know what happened here. I wasn't here when everything went down, so tell me what happened. Between you and me, I think you want to tell me. Who else here would appreciate the story?
Very well. But if I find that this is some attempt to trick me in some way, remember, Ryan doesn't control the splicers here, little moth. I do.
I made a show of looking resigned. You're the director. I headed off to Poseidon's Plaza, hearing Sanders chuckle in my ears. It didn't take long to find the next one. Martin Finnegan, a splicer whom Cohen has doomed to the frozen passage between the atrium and the plaza. I found an audio vox that Finnegan had recorded detailing his survival by cooking up his own plasmids from the bodies that Cohen had sent in to kill Finnegan. I pulled out my flamethrower, a better cure for the cold than chicken soup, and went inside. I shivered. The place was so cold it made the freezers in the fisheries feel like a summer's day. I wasn't about to let Finnegan get an unfair advantage, so as soon as I came in, I started hosing the place down with flames. Seemed like Finnegan had been waiting to freeze me solid nearby, but coming in like a fireball meant two benefits in my favor. Not only did it literally smoke Finnegan out from his hiding place, but it also defrosted some of the other trophies he'd set up around the room, and they were still lively enough to use what strength they had left to make Finnegan's life a lot shorter. I defrosted the last of them and watched as they ganged up on Finnegan. Ah, nothing like the sight of social evolution in action, I murmured, not wanting to make myself another target once they were done with Finnegan. As it turned out, I was worrying for no reason. They were all on their last legs, using what little life they had left to take Finnegan's. As the last of them fell, I heard Cohen simpering.
That was bracing. Take a photo of him and place it in the pentaptic. I'm feeling full, like an expectant mama.
An expectant mama what? I asked myself, but took the picture and hurried back to the atrium. It was too damn cold in there.
Yes. Now put the picture in the frame. Let's see what we've got here.
I finished putting the picture into place and stepping back.
It's coming together. Yes? There will always be doubters. You don't doubt me, do you? I could never stomach doubters.
Cohen added darkly. Believe me, Cohen, I have no doubts whatsoever in my mind that you need to be fitted for a new jacket with sleeves that tie in the back.
Well, little moth, two more wait. And hurry. My muse is a fickle little bitch with a very short attention span.
I nodded. I knew how he felt about his muse. I had a monkey on my back who was the same way. Cohen, tell me about Songbird.
What more needs to be known, little moth, except that she deserves blood and pain for her betrayal?
Well, Cohen, there's an old saying. Know thine enemy.
Ah, you're not a moth. You're a hornet.
His tone was something approaching admiring.
When she came to me, she was a moth herself, trying to approach the dizzying flame of my world. She was untrained, but not unpossessing of musical talent. She sang for me, a song of such passion that at the same time, she was a woman who truly understood loss and pain.
His tone grew wistful.
And men found her irresistible.
Think you can get me a picture so I can recognize my target?
Oh, I can do better. You should be coming up on a record store soon.
I entered the mall after passing through the frozen chamber. There were several storefronts here on two levels, easily accessible by a double set of wide stairs, one of which was occupied by a big daddy following a little sister. I started to formulate a plan on what to do about him when I heard the telltale sounds of a spider splicers crawling across the ceiling. Oh, that's fine, I hefted my new crossbow. Two birds with one stone. I should really stop getting cocky. It's going to get me killed. Everything had been going swell. I'd gotten the big daddy to attack the splicers and managed to swoop in, get the little sister, and cure her before she made a run for it. Even used some trap bolt to help take out the splicers before they could position themselves to attack. With the last of the splicers down, the big daddy walked towards me, and the head of the thing brushed against one of the trap lines. Those lights went from green to red faster than a traffic light in Brooklyn, and before I knew it, we weren't pals no more. I used up every grenade I had, taking it down the rest of the way, backpedaling as I did, feeling like a moron the entire time. If the splicers hadn't already worn it down, I'd be fitted for a coffin. Epitaph: Here lies Mark Jacobs, engineer, explorer, schmuck. Mourners, please omit flowers. I picked myself up. If this next disciple wasn't aware of me before, he sure as shootin' was now. Maybe he'd be open to diplomacy. But first, a little preparation. I walked towards his place, Rapture Records, looking around at the state of the store. Looks like Silas was having a fire sale. There were a pile of records, all by Sander Cohen, merrily burning away like a Cub Scout campfire right in front of the store. "Look, Silas," I said in a low voice, "I got a plan. Cohen wants you dead, but I don't. Work with me. We can fake your death, set up a real surprise for him, take him out for good. What do you say?" I stopped as I saw him sitting in a chair on the floor below in the store. I jumped down and walked over to get his attention, and that's when I heard the ticking sound. This was him telling him to go screw myself. I bolted back to find that the stairs going back up were out, and the only protection I had was a ratty mattress. I pulled it over me just as the clock went ding, and then boom. Seemed Silas already had his own plan for faking his death and making mine come faster. "My collection's almost complete, and we'll see who the real artist is down here. Tell the old crow his music cooks better than it sounds." "Damn it, Silas, I'm trying to help you." "You Cohen's messenger boy? I got something for that crow." Great. Angry and spliced up. So much for diplomacy. "Spend a little time with my kittens, sugar." For a minute there, I thought he'd taken one plasmid too many. Kittens? How are immature felines going to... Then I saw the splicers falling from the ceiling and landing in front of me, while on fire. Oh. Those kittens. I got up after the last of the splicers fell. Silas may have had loyal followers, but loyalty isn't a suitable replacement for non-burning body parts. If I hadn't shot them, they'd have fallen over on their own. I found my way back up to the entrance through the ductwork, then came out and dusted myself off.
"It's all a game, Aaron boy. Coe and Ryan, two old birds pulling on each other's milk sticks."
Okay, I was starting to want to help this guy a lot less now. People trying to kill me tends to dampen feelings of generosity. "Silas, don't force this. I don't want to kill you." I struggled my way back to the door, past the burning records, to see Silas standing there in a bird mask, carrying a crate of some kind loaded with bottles, with rags jammed into the mouths. He stared at me, then yelled,
"My kittens! You murdered my..."
That was it. That was officially it. Here I was doing everything I could to save his life, bury him a spot on Cohen's exhibit. He set splicers on me and acts like it's a horrible injustice that I have the gall to still be alive. Right in the middle of his rant, I pulled up the crossbow and put one right between the eye holes of the mask. The mask split open and fell to the floor. Silas was instantly, finally, silent. At that point, I saw his face. His eyes were sunken, his skin waxy, and falling away from his muscles and tendons. He looked like a ghoul. When he fell to the ground, all I could feel was relief.
"He was a nasty one, and my favorite."
Felt like Cohen was right behind me, looking over my shoulder at my handiwork. The sensation made my skin crawl.
"But I think I'd like him better this way. Take his damn photo, chop chop."
I grumbled involuntarily as I took the photo. This whole place was getting on my nerves. I got back to the atrium and headed for Cohen's exhibit. Cohen couldn't shut up as I arrived.
"You flutter all around the fort, taking life as you go. You're not a moth or a hornet. You're an angel.
It sounded like the realization filled him with some kind of awe.
I've never painted an angel. Maybe I should.
I didn't answer. Doing this for him was disgusting enough. Holding my tongue was worse. I put the picture into place and stepped back.
That's 3 of 5. What's that look? You don't like it, do you?
I swore inwardly. I forgot the son of a bitch could still see me. My expression must have set him off.
I don't need to be judged by you, by anyone. Screw you. Screw all you fucking doubters. Here's what I say to all of you.
Crap. Here we go. Think, damn it, think. Wait, Eve's Garden. I ran like hell towards the front door of the Gentleman's Club. I hadn't really tried to spend too much time down there. The twin turrets flanking the front doors made me feel unsociable, but right now I didn't have a choice. What I did have, however, was an electrobolt plasmid and 2 auto-hack tools set aside for a rainy day. And a hurricane was coming. I got to the start of the long hallway leading to the front of the club, and I let loose with the lightning as soon as I turned the corner. I shocked the turrets before they could get off a shot, and then used both auto-hack tools on them just as the splicers coincident after me came around the corner. And to top it all off, Cohen was playing some classical music from the Nutcracker on the PA system. I think it was Dance of the Flowers or something like that. As the turrets were cutting into the splicers, I had my research camera out, snapping photos left and right to learn more about their weaknesses. As I snapped one of a Houdini splicer, something new came out. A formula for a new plasmid. I stuck it in my pocket to look at later, and then decided to hedge my bets for the next wave by setting up trap bolts all up and down the hallway. The next wave came through, and I was starting to feel pretty clever. Right up until the Big Daddy showed up with a little sister. Before I even realized what was going on, a stray shot hit the Big Daddy. The headlights went red, and now my troubles had doubled. The Big Daddy took one look at the turret and charged towards it, moving through the electrified trap wires like a bull in a china shop. It was clear the effort hurt it considerably, but not enough to keep it from bashing away from one of the turrets. I grabbed the little sister and pulled her into the club, purging the slug from her body quickly. There were no vents nearby, so I put her under a table close by. Don't come out until I say, kid, it's not safe.
You're him, aren't you?
She asked, a slight British accent to her voice. Who?
The sad man.
I sighed, tried to smile. Not all the time. Stay here. I ran back outside to see more splicers coming, and I drew my shotgun. One of the turrets was still operational, the other totally destroyed by the Big Daddy. I gritted my teeth. Time to go to work. Fortunately, it seemed that Cohen had killed the bulk of his forces for the sake of art, and only one more wave came through before they'd had enough. Down to 1 med pack, but the splicers here were nice enough to donate to the Get Mark Out of Rapture Alive Fund. A trip to the vending machines would sort me out right. I walked back into the club. The girl was still there as I knelt down. It's okay. Splicers are gone. I'll take you somewhere safe. She nodded, taking my hand and standing up. Then she said, very prim and proper and with a small curtsy,
"My name is Eleanor Lamb. I am pleased to meet you."
I couldn't help but laugh. "Well, Eleanor Lamb, my name is Mark Jacobs. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance." She smiled back, beaming. God, that smile. I walked with her to the nearest vent. "How many more little sisters are there on this level?" She calculated in her head, then said,
2. All the others here were either sold off or helped by you."
I stopped. Sold. I took a deep breath. By whom? Her face grew frightened.
Mr. Cohen.
I brought her to the vent and lifted her up. "Listen, you don't need to worry about him anymore. I'll find the other 2 and send them on home too, okay?" She nodded and then disappeared into the vent. I turned back towards the atrium. "Cohen, you have got a lot to answer for, and so help me God, I'll make sure you never destroy any more lives. If I achieve nothing more than to do that, it'll be enough. I entered the atrium slowly after refilling and rearming. I heard Cohen's voice again, and I had to physically restrain myself from making inarticulate sounds of rage.
I'm sorry for that outburst. You'll have to forgive an old fool his artistic temperament.
My God, he sounds like he did nothing more than spill his drink at a party.
The birth is so close now. The labor pains can blur the judgment and drive the passions of even the finest spirits.
Oh, I'm sure. My teeth were grinding. Who's the fourth?
Rodriguez. You may find him at his usual preferred place of libation, as most failed artists are wont to go, trying to find talent at the bottom of a bottle.
I nodded and went to pick up the little gifts he set aside each time I brought a picture. Mostly Eve hypos and med packs, but this one was different. It was a record. The front said, "Presenting Elizabeth, Cohen's new songbird, You Belong to Me." And it had a picture of Cohen on the right and a woman on the left. She was beautiful. Dark hair, elfin features, a choker around her neck with the image of a bird on it. Her voice barely did her justice. The thought of someone like that having to endure what she did. I didn't think I could hate this place, Fontaine, Ryan, or Cohen even more than I already did. I was wrong. Eve's garden? I asked as evenly as I could.
Yes. You may find it useful to go to one of the back rooms and wait there for him.
And after him, Songbird. No answer. But I could tell the smug bastard thought he had me right where he wanted me. I walked out of the atrium. One more disciple. Two little sisters. Don't get cocky. I did what I could to repair the remaining turret in front of Eve's garden, then went inside. Now that I had the chance to get a better look at the place, bar to drink at, stage for dancers, even some posters around for some of the girls. One in particular, Jasmine Jolene, Andrew Ryan's favorite gal. Judging from the posters and the photograph over the bar, she was a looker, all right. The photo showed her hanging off Ryan's arm, a smile on her face. From the outfit she was wearing, Jasmine definitely had, as an old schoolmate of mine once put it, a body built for bedrooms. Looking around the state the place was in, it was a sure bet she'd packed off and head to Ryan's side as soon as Fort Frolic went to hell. I hate to think what would happen to a woman that looked like her in this place. What Cohen would do to her. I climbed up on the stage and walked towards the back. As soon as I made the turn to the right, I knew something was wrong. Then the door opened. The first thing that hit me was the smell. It nearly knocked me off my feet. I covered my face with a cloth and looked around, trying to get my eyes to focus. It was a really nice bedroom. Four-poster bed, safe, some furniture, and Jasmine Jolene's body. Her body was twisted, and I didn't need to be a coroner to tell she'd been strangled to death. Did some splicer do this? I used my last hack tool on the safe and found some supplies. And a recording.
That creepy Dr. Tenenbaum promised me it wasn't going to be a real pregnancy. They'd just take the egg out once Mr. Ryan and I had... Oh, I needed the money so bad. But I know Mr. Ryan's going to suss it out. Going to know I wasn't being careful. Going to know I sold the... Mr. Ryan's going to be so mad at me.
I ran out of the room and closed the door behind me fast. I stayed there, my back against the wall, as the sheer gravity of what had happened sank in. That guy, the one who died crashing his plane, that was somehow the child they'd taken out of her. After throwing flames, lightning, ice, and whirlwinds, what's a little speed aging among friends? And Ryan had murdered a desperate girl, strangled her in her own bed. I could barely wrap my head around it. It was inhuman. What kind of monster? That's when I was broken out of my musings by somebody yelling in Eve's garden. The echoes making the sound even more unsettling.
How about some fucking service here?
Rodriguez. Maybe there's still one chance to get what Cohen wants without killing anyone else.
Hey! Hey! What's a guy gotta do to...
Sorry about that, sir, I said quickly, straightening my apron. I'm afraid the war has taken its toll on the service, but I'm still here. What's your pleasure? I smiled as winningly as I could. He looked at me dubiously and then said,
Whiskey, neat.
Coming right up. Shall I open a tab for you, sir? He sat up a little at that.
Yeah, decent of you.
I was no bartender, but I'd been around a few pubs to mimic the techniques. Besides, he didn't seem like a guy interested in mixed drinks. I set his drink down on a napkin. So, seeing as how things are slow, you have my undivided attention. Tell me your troubles, Mac.
It's Cohen. He's trying to kill me. It wasn't enough that he... The things that man made me do.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's a tough break. As I talked, I started writing on a pad of paper for taking orders, praying that he wasn't so spliced up that he'd freak out like Silas did. What else can I get you?
Another. Same.
He wasn't slurring his words yet. Good. I needed him sober enough to understand me. I left the pad on the table as I went to get the drink, hoping he'd glance at it and read the message I'd left for him. As I came back, he looked up at me and nodded ever so slightly. Thank Christ. I served him the drink, then stepped back as he drank deep and set the drink down.
Another. Same.
He looked at me, then grazed the glass.
What? What?
Rodriguez launched himself across the bar, grabbing me and hauling me over it, throwing me to the ground and punching me as hard as he could. The first few punches had me seeing stars, but the fourth punch missed and he fell to the floor, lying on his side, foam coming from his lips. I pushed myself away and stood up. Cohen spoke again, and his words were nearly ecstatic.
Now that was a performance. What did you do to him?
Rat poison. I didn't feel like chasing him all over Fort Frolic.
He was a lout, but he was vigorous.
He said with a hint of admiration, then his voice turned imperious again.
Get the photo before he completely dries up.
I wanted to say something sarcastic, but I was so close to finding Elizabeth now, I didn't want to risk everything I'd done so far for a moment's satisfaction. I simply took the picture and headed back to the atrium. Cohen, of course, loved to hear the sound of his own voice prattling on about his legacy and other testaments to his greatness while I put the fourth photo on display. There. Only one left, Cohen.
Indeed, and I am a man of my word. The Bathysphere at the Rapture Metro Station will take you to the final resting place of Fontaine's Folly. You will find the songbird there. Bring me her cold corpse. Add it to my masterpiece, and I shall pledge all of Fort Frolic's resources to your support. Like Arcadia and the other locations you've conquered, Fort Frolic will be as safe as milk. But cross me, Angel, and I shall see to it that you are imprisoned in purgatory.
I nodded, checked my supplies, and headed to the Bathysphere. Now all I need to do is figure out a way to outsmart Cohen. No, that was secondary. Finding Elizabeth was primary. I'll figure out the rest once I find her. The Bathysphere trip sure took long enough. More than once I started to wonder if I was going to run out of air on the way over. Just when the air was starting to get thin, I saw the entrance to a structure that looked like someone sunk the Chrysler building. The lights were on, advertising housewares, and the machinery still seemed to work. The platform lifted the Bathysphere out of the water without any hitches. The door couldn't have been opened soon enough for me, and I stumbled out into the platform. The air was surprisingly fresh. I was expecting it to be as stale as month-old bread, but it actually smelled nicer in here than it did in Arcadia. Probably the lack of rotting food, or just the eagerness for fresh air. I got out and looked around. Things looked newer here by comparison to the war-torn halls of Rapture. There was some damage here, but for the most part, the damage was minimal at best. Ads were still up, and a lot of product was still on the shelves. Thanks to the cool of the air, the store was almost perfectly preserved. But it felt so empty. I knew it was the wrong thing to do, but I called out, "Hello?" Hearing the call bounce off the walls and the windows going unanswered. Maybe the radio would work now. Surely I was far enough away from Cohen's jamming signal to get Elizabeth on the line. I pulled it out and dialed up her frequency, took a deep breath, and pressed the talk button. "Elizabeth, are you out there?" No answer. "Elizabeth?" Nothing. Not a sound. I felt like I was in the center of a ghost town. "Mark, find the will. Elizabeth's in here somewhere. You did not run this far in this marathon to trip on the finish line." I nodded to myself, then said aloud, "Hang on, Elizabeth. I'm coming."
To be continued in part 7.